This is Unconcluded. I'm Sean Gerd. Last time, we introduced you to the disappearance of Tracy Ocasio in the early morning hours of May 27th, 2009. Tracy disappeared after being last seen with a man currently in prison for his attack on another woman. So the question of who is responsible is answered, right? But could there be additional people involved? That's where we're going to dig a little deeper. We also wanted to look closer at just where Tracy could be. Most conclude that she probably didn't make it out of the situation that night. But even so, she's still out there somewhere. Can we narrow in on an additional possibility? Or can we think about, after all of this time, could she still be found? And just because the person responsible for Tracy's disappearance is likely known, the attention toward Tracy's case seems to fall behind those disappearances with more mysterious suspects. And so is it that it just hasn't been reported, or are there possible locations that are still to be considered? We also tried to track down some of these other players to see if they could offer any perspective. But as you'll hear, that didn't go really well. Later, we're also going to look at some things that were sent to us after the last few weeks and decide what, if anything, is valuable in the search for Tracy. Someone knows something. That phrase gets thrown around a lot, especially when searching for answers in cases such as disappearances. And it seems to be that James Hathaway likely knows something. But does anyone else? And is there anyone who he would have told? And further, is there anyone who would have firsthand knowledge, possibly having been involved themselves? So this is where we found ourselves over the last few weeks, trying our hardest to compile a list of individuals who might know something, and then find out if they do. And honestly, the plan really didn't go that well. We looked into the time of her disappearance around mid-2009, and we also looked back at the past and the years previous to that, compiling names of anyone even remotely connected to either Tracy or Hathaway himself. We're talking family members, former romantic partners, roommates, friends, co-workers. We were able to develop a list of 8 people that we felt like was important to get more information on and try to talk to. We determined that a few of them had since passed away. So we had 6 remaining names. We started making calls and tried to see what was out there. We were hoping that someone would be willing to speak. Maybe they'd never been asked the question before. That was our hope. The reality is that we found a universal opposition to answering questions, or really communication of any kind. Unanswered calls, hang-ups, cuss-outs, and no luck. We went exactly 0-for-6 in contacting or even talking to any of these people. So what we had left was hearsay, rumors, and a lot of what-ifs. But we continued to look at the notes we compiled, and a couple things stood out. In particular, with the individual who had had a prior altercation with Tracy. Allegedly, in the early morning hours of April 15, 2009, a man was arrested on a battery charge for basically knocking Tracy Ocasio to the ground. The story we heard, and we can't confirm this outside of third-person accounts and various internet rumblings, is that Tracy had poured a drink on a friend of this person, which led to the individual's battery on Tracy. There seems to be some conflicting accounts about exactly what happened leading up to this event, but the end result was the physical altercation. What makes it interesting is that James Hathaway actually worked for this individual. In addition to that, it seems possible that this person, his brother, and others in their circle of friends may have been at the Tap Room bar the night of Tracy's disappearance. However, to be clear, we were unable to verify or confirm this in any way. I did ask Joe Ocasio about this guy and whether he thought that he could be involved.
Yeah, you know what? In the beginning, I always did, and there's still a tint of it, because again, they were friends and hung out together, or you know, actually, how do we work for him, cleaning up lakes and such. But I think the longer that's passed, and the things that Hadaway has said afterwards have maybe reconsidered that. I don't think that, you know, the other guy was involved.
So while Joe doesn't seem to think there's anything to it these days, I'm not so sure. I've also read some accounts that this man and his brother were immediately cleared by police. But the reasoning behind that, that they had just strongly denied it, has to be wrong. I can't see how that would be a reason for clearing someone. And it would seem that further questioning is in order. There just seem to be too many quote-unquote coincidences that come together here. They're potentially at the Tap Room bar the night she disappeared. They know, fairly well it would seem, the person who most believe is responsible for Tracy's disappearance. And to top it all off, she had already had altercations with this person in the past. It seems foolish that they could just be ruled out right away. I think one of the things that we've definitely learned for as long as we've been doing this podcast is sometimes assuming what law enforcement does or has done isn't probably the smartest thing to do. We do know that this person had a history of at least some kind of aggression towards women. But then again, someone else is carrying out the crime. So there's a lot of reasons here that would make sense motive-wise. But when you think about the way that it likely went down, Tracy left the bar with Hadaway, it seems maybe less likely that those other individuals were involved. We could play a lot of guessing games. Maybe they were talking at the bar and negatively about Tracy, for example, and Hadaway said, oh, I'm going to take care of it. But that's just playing a guessing game that I don't think we need to do here. So at this point, we keep it as an open possibility, even if it's somewhat unlikely. Now, despite all of the other questions that remain about these people and others, we know that Tracy Ocasio is out there somewhere. One of the things that we started thinking about over the last few weeks, since that first episode, was the location that her car was found, and also the condition in which it was found. Some of the things just didn't seem to add up, and we really wanted to kind of reconcile those differences. And we knew we needed to spend some time looking into it. Also give a shout out to a listener, Mike, who sent me an email with some of these same thoughts, and it's really one of the reasons that we started thinking about it a little bit more. So let's start with that car. If you remember from the last episode, the car was found on West Franklin Street, near the intersection of the railroad tracks, which are kind of parallel to North Kissimmee Avenue. But if you actually go there, and I'll talk to Scott about this a little bit later, it's not as close as you'd think based on various news articles that imply that it's like steps away. Even last episode, as we looked into it, we thought it was a lot closer than it actually is when you're there. But all along, it seems that no one really pays much attention to the location of where the car was found outside of the fact that it was just close to Hadaway's house. We wanted to consider whether that might be more important than it seemed, especially considering that the home that the car was left in front of has kind of its own interesting history. The shooting death of its owner in 2016, and apparent possible ties to drugs and dealing of drugs, as shown by some of the occupants' rap sheets. So could drugs dealt from this home, for example, have played a role in Tracy's disappearance? Could that explain why her car was parked in front of this house? We already know that that was something that Hadaway had claimed when police spoke to him, that he had asked Tracy to partake in some drugs when she dropped him off and she declined. But maybe there were some partial truths involved. Additionally, we also started thinking about how close the car was found to the train tracks. Could that indicate something? After visiting and looking, the tracks don't really lead to anything. We looked all around and it really just, they went nowhere. There were houses on both sides. It's probably just a coincidence. Also, it must be noted that the car was slightly closer to a lake than Hadaway's house, meaning the car was found in between Hadaway's house and a lake, obviously much closer to Hadaway's house. But it was still quite a distance from that lake. Probably not anything meaningful. After looking again and visiting, I was thinking again it was just kind of a random spot that was fairly close to Hadaway's house. Then I started thinking about how that car was found. Here's Joe Ocasio again from last episode.
You know, there was DNA in the car, but we knew that he was supposed to be there because, quote unquote, he gave her a ride. But there was DNA on the driver's side, which he was not supposed to be on, which means that he drove the car. And then when the car was found, the seats were totally, the front seats were totally pushed over and left with the seats down, meaning there was something or someone that was placed in the back of the seat and it was taken in, you know, it was taken in or out. So just the circumstances surrounding that, we're pretty sure that he did it.
So those seats being pushed forward, and also note that this is a two-door car, so access to the back seat is only available by pushing those seats forward. It makes it evident that something was probably being pulled out from the back. Which, let's be honest, at this point we're all thinking a body, right? But then why are both seats pushed forward? If you're pulling something out from one side door, you'd only need to do it from the one side with the one seat. I suppose twos forward could make it easier, but doesn't seem like it would be necessary. So that's still possibility one. Both seats pushed forward to pull something out, the implication, of course, being to pull Tracy out. Which then means that there had to be another means of transporting her, right? Because of where the car was parked, obviously her body wasn't found there. So if she was pulled from the back, she was transported somewhere else. There'd have to be another vehicle, possibly other people, but at least another vehicle. But there's another possibility. There could have been people in the back seat. So after the driver got out, the seats were pushed forward and individuals got out of the back seat. Seems unlikely, but it's an explanation. And then there's a third option that I thought about. And that's that nothing was pulled out from the back. And honestly, this is kind of where I'm leaning at the moment, what I think might be most likely. See, if you're not pulling something out, why would you push the seats forward? Just to have access to the back seat, right? Well, why would you need access? To clean it up, to check and make sure there's nothing left behind, that kind of thing. That would also make sense why both seats were pushed forward. You want to check both sides. That's my thinking here. The suspect drives the car, which we know because the DNA was on the driver's side, with Tracy in it. Likely in the back seat, incapacitated in some way. He puts her somewhere, and then drives the car back to Franklin Street where it was found. As he parks it, pushes the seats forward, checks and makes sure there's nothing left behind, and then leaves. That's just what makes the most sense to me right now. But what does that mean? Well, not a whole lot that we don't already know, but it makes it much more possible that the suspect did it alone. He wouldn't have needed another vehicle if he used Tracy's car for the transportation of Tracy. And this kind of leads me also to start thinking about the boot of Tracy's that was found. Here's a reminder again from last episode.
We believe it's strongly it was hers. When she was crazy about shoes, and she just always left the labels, original labels on the bottom of the shoes. And her and her girlfriend used to share shoes, you know, so her girlfriend swore by that it was hers. And when we saw it, we thought it was the same. There was not enough DNA in it or sweat for them to determine 100%, but we know that it was hers. My personal thought has always been that something happened in that area, because that's an area where he really hung out with people. And it's not too far from where he, where her car was found. And maybe something happened there, and from there he took her somewhere else. That's always been my thinking.
Was the boot found by one of the lakes, or was that in a completely different location?
No, it was on the, it was in the lake area, but not on the lake. It was actually on the ground near the cemetery area, and it was found by Orange County Mounted Sheriff.
So the boot was found near Lake Bennett, which is on the smaller side for a lake. It's located on West Colonial Drive, just to the east of South Bluford Avenue. It's a little less than 2 mile drive from where Tracy's car was found. It took us about 8 minutes to make the drive when we were in Ocoee. So while it's close, there's much larger lakes that exist that are closer. For example, Stark Lake is much closer. But Stark Lake is much more active with boaters and fishermen, and there's buildings and the police station and those sorts of things near there as well. Maybe it wouldn't have been a suitable location. Maybe this Lake Bennett makes more sense. So let's put it together then. Something happens at or near the suspect's home. He then drives just under 2 miles with Tracy in the car, her own car, to Lake Bennett and leaves her there. But then later only a boot is found? So that doesn't make sense. There would have to be more than just the boot there, right? And the boot was found in the woods, not in the lake. Or maybe the boot fell off as she was being transported to the lake. But again, the lake isn't that big. I feel like it would have easily been able to be searched completely, and it was searched. But let's remember back also from last episode about the sighting with the pickup truck.
Gone. I mean, I always believe that something happened here in Ocoee and he took her somewhere else. You know, and I truly believe that it happened after he saw the media and all the attention that it got. He was seen 2 nights later in a dark pickup, which was similar to what his father used to drive, even though he didn't drive, by a lady that was working at the hospital. Across from the hospital, which is not too far there from Lake Bennett, there was some construction. He was seen in that area, a person that looked like him in that particular car. So I believe that that's when he picked her up from that Lake Bennett area and put her somewhere else, wherever he put her.
So if we're adding to our theory here that we've got going, he later returns to the site near Lake Bennett, picks up the body with the pickup truck, and moves the body somewhere else. Now, while this seems incredibly risky, you've got to remember that Lake Bennett is a small lake. It's probably not the best place to try to hide a body. Also, the suspect may have not been in the right mind that night. We've already heard him talking about drugs and those sorts of things. So maybe once the heat was on, he starts thinking about it, decides he needs to make a change. That's kind of where I am right now, as far as what may have happened, or maybe the most likely scenario. And we're going to use that to see if we can narrow down some locations as we move forward. Now, as a side note, while we're talking about this Lake Bennett, for those of you that followed along on season 1, Jennifer Kessie, Lake Bennett is essentially just one block north of Jennifer Kessie's workplace. So you can see why initially there was some concern that the cases could be linked. All right, we're going to take a break for just a minute to hear about our sponsor for this episode. And then we'll get into some different things that we've been sent over the last few weeks to see if they're worth considering. I've tried so many different brands of deodorant over the years, but I've recently found one that really makes a difference. I'm talking about a safe, simple, and effective deodorant from Native. I've been using the eucalyptus and mint scent, and not only does it smell great, but it just works. I'm not the only one either. There's over 8,000 five-star reviews to back me up. I love that it lasts all day and keeps me smelling fresh, especially in the summer heat, when I need it most. Less is more with Native. There's fewer, simpler ingredients so that you know everything that's in the deodorant. Native also offers a wide variety of enticing scents for men and women. Plus, they release limited edition seasonal scents throughout the year as well. Also, if you've got sensitive skin, they've got you covered as well with an unscented formula and a baking soda-free formula. For 20% off your first purchase, visit nativedeodorant.com and use promo code UNCONCLUDED during checkout. It's that easy. Get your 20% off by visiting nativedeodorant.com and using our promo code UNCONCLUDED. And there's no risk in trying it out either, with free returns and exchanges in the United States. Thanks to Native for supporting our show. So, as I mentioned a minute ago, after the first episode on Tracy, we started getting information from listeners and other people, and much of this information wasn't new, or we'd already discussed. Things about Hathaway, or people that knew him, or knew her, and we also started getting a lot of stuff of the supernatural variety. Now, if you've listened to this show long enough, you'll know my thoughts on psychics and mediums and the like. I'm not a fan or a believer. But I also have said that these supernatural things can be used as cover by people that may actually have information pertaining to the case. So it's worth at least listening. But of course, those would always be the exception, not the rule. Now, I don't consider anything that was sent incredible at this point, but I did want to share a few examples just for the transparency with everyone. One of the things that we got said that there were three people involved, but it also included a lot of very vague statements along with it. They talked about believing that Tracy was robbed, that she may have been taken to Winter Garden, which is an area roughly 3 miles to the west of where his car was found, right near Lake Apopka. It also mentioned water and that kind of thing. There was another one that talked about being pushed into the water and tied up. It also mentioned three people as well, so that was interesting. That actually came up a few times. We were also sent an online link to a supernatural website, which were discussing the name Nolan and a location referred to as Sycamore Street with connections to Kelly Park Road. Whatever all of that means seemed to be random things, but commenters were trying to put them together in reference to Tracy. We received several other links to different psychic posts and readings, but none of it was concrete, all vague, wishy-washy statements. Again, that I just don't find relevant or important. But we did want to let you know that we at least follow up on it. Now, before we go, I did want to talk to Scott a little bit because he's been spending the most time in Ocoee and the surrounding areas trying to make sense of everything. So I mentioned earlier in the episode about the location where Tracy's car was found, specifically, you know, in relationship to the suspect's house, right? And when we've read about this case, especially as we were preparing for that first episode last month, you know, it seems like so much is said about how close the car was found to the suspect's house. But I don't know if you agree with me, but after actually seeing it in person and kind of driving between those two locations, it didn't really seem that close. I mean, 500 yards is 500 yards, right? It's not that far. And it's certainly close enough that it draws suspicion. But I don't know, it started making me think about why that car might be in that specific spot. I don't know, did it seem farther to you at all? Or am I just kind of like, is that in my head?
No, it did. And the thing is, you know, you sort of get this image, I guess, in your head because you hear, oh, it was close to his house. And, you know, in the whole scheme of things, yes, it's close to his house. But I guess in my mind, when I'm thinking close to the house, like he can see it from his house, you know, like look right outside and see it. And that's not the case. I mean, it's probably pushing, you know, over a quarter mile away, if not more. Well, maybe not that much, but
yeah, you know, the weird thing is, And maybe this was part of just realizing it, is you hear a quarter mile, it just doesn't seem like it's a far distance, like it's real short, but then you see a quarter mile, it's farther than you think.
It definitely is, especially in terms of thinking about what's close and what's not close. And again, you come back to the word close and it can mean many, many different things. And in this case, I just don't think that, I guess in my mind, that I was expecting to go there and see the amount of distance that there was. Again, it's close, but it's not as close as I guess we were sort of picturing in our heads when we went.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that struck me, and I know that we actually
went at different times just because of our schedules this time, but I don't know, like just seeing the location made me think more about, did that location have some specific reasoning behind it? And I keep talking myself out of that. I keep saying, oh, it's just random, but I don't know. There's so many coincidences. Like I said, the person being shot there several years later, the ties to, you know, possible drug activity and that kind of stuff. And maybe that's something that's common in that part of town, but it just makes you start thinking about, you know, is there a reason that that car could have been there? Obviously close to his house, but why that specific spot? It doesn't seem like it would be a place that would be a good choice if you were just kind of driving down the road and looking for a place to stash the car. It doesn't seem like it would be the spot to do it, but I don't know. Maybe we're looking for something that's not there and just trying to make things up, but I don't know. That's just what kept running through my head, actually, like seeing the area.
Well, no, I think that's part of the process that we're sort of going through right now, is it seems pretty obvious in our heads, or in mine at least, about who did this. And so then you almost start looking at, can we find a way that it was either somebody else or there was somebody else involved, or like why was it so close to his house? And yes, 500 yards, quarter mile-ish, in terms of what we were thinking wasn't close, but in terms of what the police are going to look at, they're definitely going to consider that to be close to his house, especially obviously once they had the video and stuff. So was it left in that exact spot for a reason? As you said, that house seems to have had some illicit activity going on. Were they there to make a purchase of some sort at that house? I know it was known for drug sales. Did something go wrong? And then did they have to try to cover something up from there? It seems like if Hathaway was going to leave it somewhere random, you'd leave it 10 miles away or 15 miles away, and then you figure out how to get back to your house. To leave it, you know, 500 yards away just doesn't seem to make sense in terms of what he was trying to accomplish that night, if indeed he was the one that accomplished it. So I don't know. I keep going back and forth on it too, and I keep wanting to tell myself, no, this is just a part of what he did that night, and there was no rhyme or reason to it. It was, you know, something that happened, and then he had to scramble from there, and he didn't take into account how close it was. He thought he moved it far enough. And, you know, then I bring myself back to, well, why though? There needs to be a reason, and maybe it's just my mind having to find reasons for stuff that maybe it's not rational, so there is no reason behind it. But, you know, I do have a hard time letting it go like you.
Well, and I think you bring up a good point about us wanting to have someone else be involved, because after all this time, he's not giving it up, right? He's not going to give the information out. So we need to get it from somewhere else, right? And so it almost makes you want to find something that tells you someone else is involved. And maybe that gives us kind of a, I don't know the right word for it, but it makes us want to try to find things that aren't really there. Like, oh man, maybe there is something about this house, and we can make a connection to that, and then someone might know something. And I think that kind of, you get yourself into dangerous territory with that, because then you start trying to make the narrative fit what you want it to fit. So I don't know. But at the same time, I want to make sure that, you know, you're covering all the bases, and that you're not just assuming, okay, it's close to Hathaway's house, that's the only reason it's there, let's move on. Let's definitely think about, could there be something more to that particular location? So it's a hard thing you have to balance. And I guess, you know, there is no concrete answers there. It's more of just something you got to make sure that you consider and go from there.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a fine line between self-fulfilling prophecy and, like you said, us sort of finding what we want to find to lead to what we want to have happen, and actually looking into everything we find. You know, you don't want to dig too deep to where you start putting stuff together that doesn't belong together, but at the same time, you can't just ignore it because you're worried about digging too deep. So it's, I don't know, this case has been frustrating because of that, because it's been where you think you already see the goal line, and now we just have to figure out how to get there and, you know, get to the end of the game with what we probably know what the answer is, but at the same time, you can't just run ahead with stuff that you don't know. And so we're stuck in this situation where we don't want to fill in the gaps with what we want it to be. We want to fill in the gaps with what it is. And so it's just been a little bit more of a slower process than honestly I thought it was going to be. And obviously some stuff we'll talk about later too has added to that a little bit, but this has been a lot tougher than I thought. It's been more challenging than I thought. You know, there's a reason somebody's missing for this long, so maybe I shouldn't have thought that, but it's been frustrating for sure.
Yeah, I think the challenging parts have been things that we didn't expect to be challenging, right? The ability to talk to people that are possibly not necessarily involved, but just, you know, our characters within the realm of Tracy Ocasio and her disappearance. And it's been incredibly hard to even A, find some of these people, but B, after we're finding them, which, you know, we feel like, oh, a small victory. Okay, we found this person. All right, cool. Let's talk to them. And then we're getting, you know, completely walled off, which is something that is slightly new to us because, you know, in our last go around, you know, with Jennifer Cassie, we found a lot of people who were willing to talk. In fact, almost everyone that we, you know, were able to get in touch with and stuff like that, we were able to convince to, at least off the record, talk to us. In this case, it has not been that way. It's been very much almost hostile with some people, I think. And that's been tough, I think, because we feel like we've made some headway and we did this work to find this particular person. And then, well, they're unwilling to even share anything with us. Not that we're expecting them to you know, necessarily incriminate anyone or anything like that, but just for basics, you know, basic stuff, that's been hard. So I don't know. I think it's been frustrating more so than anything.
Well, yeah, and not only did we have people that were willing to talk with Jennifer Cassie, we had people reaching out to us. We had people calling us and wanting to tell their story. And like you said, we had a few people that called us and said, listen, we want to tell you some stuff. We want to either have it off the record or we do not want to be on the show. But it was a stream of information that was either coming in or us reaching out and people saying, sure, I'm willing to talk. And like you said, this has just been a little bit shocking in some instances. Yeah, not the easiest thing to do. And it hasn't helped. That's for sure. You know, we spent a month trying to do this and we could have probably spent another 3 months, to be completely honest, to, I don't know if relationship's the right word, but build some sort of rapport with these people. And it's something that I don't want to give up on for sure. I obviously don't want to bother people either if they don't want to be bothered, but I think it's important. And I think it's something that, you know, I feel obligated to at least continue to try for Tracy's sake and continue to try to move forward with it, regardless of whether we got to, you know, find some more people or maybe come about it with some different angles. But the angle we took this time definitely wasn't what was successful, that's for sure.
No, not at all. And it makes it hard because in my mind, you don't want to talk to me. Well, what do you have to hide? You know, it's hard not to think
right.
That. And some of the people that we're even referring to are people that we weren't even reaching out to in a capacity of, oh, you might be involved or you might know something. It was just like general information. And it's just unwilling to really participate. And it's just something that we're going to have to deal with in this case, I guess. But I want to go back for a second to the car. We were talking about the location that the car was found. And I also, you know, mentioned earlier in the episode about the seats being pushed forward, both seats being pushed forward in her car when her mom came to pick it up that next morning, and kind of the ramifications of that. Obviously, you know, I mentioned that being a two-door car, the seats are going to have to get pushed forward to get access to the back seat. You know, I narrowed it down to the three things that I mentioned earlier. Obviously, there was either, you know, likely Tracy taken out of the back, seats pushed forward to do that, people in the back that just got out after the driver, which I don't think is likely, but it's certainly, you know, an explanation, as I said. And then the third thing, and this is kind of what I want to get your take on, because this is where I'm leaning a little bit, is the fact that both seats were pushed forward, to me, you know, as I said earlier, just says that the, you know, person was getting into the back of the car from both sides, right? The driver's door and the passenger door. There's no reason to put the passenger seat forward if you're just coming in from the driver's door. So why would you do that? You can only take something out from one side. You can't take it out from both sides of the car. And so that led me to believe that it's just someone trying to get back into both sides, check to make sure that there's nothing back there, maybe possibly cleaning. I'm not sure there was any evidence to support that. But is that the most logical thing here? And I certainly want to sound that off you because I don't want to. I have a habit of kind of just going with my own opinion here and not really seeing if there's, you know, a different opinion that maybe I didn't think about. What are your thoughts on that?
So I think your three logical explanations are obviously that just that. And I think that it's probably one of those things. And what makes the most sense based upon what we know and what's out there, and there's very little, but is that they were probably moved up to clean something in the back or even to check to make sure. You know, if you do something like this, you're probably making sure, you know, did something fall out of my pocket and fall into the back? I want to check the baseboards. I want to check, you know, underneath the seats and all that kind of stuff. People in the back definitely could be something. You think that they would have found possibly more evidence if that was the case. Of course, they could have gone and cleaned after that too. But, you know, I would probably lean towards where you're at. That's where my head is at right now, is that it was just a precautionary thing to clean it up. But then again, my mind then starts to wander a little bit as to if this individual went to those lengths to clean out the car, why not move it? Why not move the car further away? Why not just hop in, take the car 10 miles away, dump it in an abandoned lot somewhere or something like that? So there was, if that's the case, there's definitely some forethought going on. If I have to clean the car up, I have to get rid of any evidence, but then to still leave it there is the part that sort of throws me off a little bit and is something that, you know, I want to explore a little bit more. And with people getting out, other people in the back leads more to it making sense where the car was at. They could have picked up a few extra people on their way home and they were going to this house because they were going to get something or do something or party or whatever. Something goes wrong. And then the car is just abandoned there. And that's how it was when the people got out. That makes more sense in terms of the timeline of how things went. If he really did go in and clean it, unless he was just panicking and out of his mind, you think at that point you're taking that time to do that, just move the car further away from your house. But, you know, maybe he thought it was far enough. I don't know. I wasn't in his head that night. I wish I was. I wish I had some insight to that. But as of right now, we don't have any insight to that.
Yeah. And I think too, the idea, if we kind of get behind that, that tells you that she was certainly somewhere, the car was somewhere else with her in the back before it got to that point. Like, I don't see how it would have not been a situation where he used the car to transport her somewhere else. If he's spending the time to get back there and check and make sure everything's fine.
Yeah, definitely. I think you just summed it up very well. There isn't any reason to do that. So, and that's sort of where I just have a hard time placing and figuring out with that. And I guess the only way we'd have the answer to that is if we speak to him and, you know, that's a work in progress. So
let's change gears for a second and talk a little bit about Lake Bennett. As you know, that was the lake that her boot was found near, and it's, you know, pretty close to the place that her car was found. It's a little less than 2 miles away. I wanted to get your thoughts on, and we actually had a chance to kind of check this place out on more than one occasion, but I think the thing that struck me most about looking at Lake Bennett in person as opposed to kind of on the internet is it's not as big as I would have imagined. There is a decent amount of woods around it. Certainly it's several years later, so there's been some development, I think, more than, you know, there would have been at the time. But I just expected that lake to be a lot larger. If it's a place that, you know, quote unquote, a body's being disposed of, it just didn't seem like a place that I would choose, you know, if I was someone trying to find a desolate location. But again, you know, the suspect's the person that's familiar with the area and all of that kinds of things. Did it strike you as an odd place at all?
Yeah, I agree. It was smaller than I anticipated, because, you know, we've been on scene for some of the Jennifer Kessie stuff too, and some of those lakes are massive. And this just didn't have that massive size that maybe we were expecting it to. And I mean, we'd looked at pictures online and stuff, but again, that sometimes that doesn't give you the total picture of what it's like until you get there. And then it's also, it's not super secluded at all for this kind of a thing. You know, maybe you could say it's secluded in other ways, but not for something like this. And, you know, and maybe that goes back to why, maybe he went back and moved, or maybe he had the same reaction a couple days later, like, oh, this is not maybe the best place. And, you know, her dad talked about how he had a pickup truck, was seen in a pickup truck and stuff like that. So, you know, maybe it was a situation that he gathered her up and her boot was left there, and then she was moved someplace else. But yeah, initial reaction is that that's not someplace you would think would be the first choice for somebody to do something like that, based upon the size, the location, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think when I first heard, I think it was the first time I talked to Joe, actually, and he talked about what you heard earlier in this episode, where he thought it might have been a situation where she was moved later. I was like, oh, no, that's not what happened. Like, no one would do that. You know, that's just silly. But the more that you actually think about it, and really in this case, the more that you actually see it, and seeing Lake Bennett, the area that this apparently happened, it kind of does make sense, because it's a place where if he left her there, she would have been found. I'm positive of that. So I don't think that she's there anymore, Lake Bennett. Obviously, you know, certainly that's just my opinion. And if she was at some point, him moving her, I guess it sort of does make sense. And it seems absolutely crazy, because it doesn't seem like something that would be a smart thing to do. But, you know, as her dad said, you know, realizing that the heat is on him, and making a decision that's something that needs to happen. Certainly the sighting lends some support to that. I suppose it makes sense. And I guess I've slowly been talking myself into the good possibility, I think, that something along those lines is what happened.
I think it's starting to almost lean more towards that, based upon just the fact that there's just a boot and nothing else. Like her dad said, with the truck, the location, I mean, it's right on Colonial Drive. You know, maybe that night it sounded like a good idea, and a couple of days later it didn't. And I agree with you. I think it's almost starting to lean more towards that being the more legitimate possibility than the other way around.
Yeah, for sure. And so I think that's kind of where we go. And, you know, the thing is, I think I expected to be a lot farther along at this point. When we initially planned, you know, the way that we were going to do these episodes, and we were going to have a whole month to look into this. And I feel like if you think about a whole month, I'm like, oh my gosh, we've barely scratched the surface almost of the things that we're kind of looking at. And, you know, and part of that has been just, I think it's been a lot more difficult to get the response from certain people that we were hoping to get. But it's also, it's such a small area, but it's such a big area as well. And the tracing those steps piece by piece has been a little bit harder than maybe I thought it would be. And so, you know, where do we go from here? I think we start looking at, you know, from Lake Bennett to where, if we're kind of piecing together our theory, so to speak, and hopefully some other people can start, you know, helping us think about things in a little bit different way. I know it's, you know, when it's one or two people, you kind of get your mind set on a particular track, and I'm pretty interested in this, you know, this next bit of time that we have before episode 3 to start getting some other opinions or some other thoughts and looking at things in a different way than maybe what we're already doing. Because certainly I think we need that, because it's starting to become a thing where I'm looking kind of one path and putting blinders onto the rest of it. And I don't want to do that.
No, and here's the thing. With the Kessie case, so little was known, and there wasn't a suspect. So there was so many different possibilities that it could be. So everything you think of ends up being, well, yeah, that could have actually happened. That makes sense. Or everybody that calls in, because there's so little information and you want to be able to cling to something. You want to be able to get something, get some sort of shred of information that's going to take us in the right direction. And so I think that's where maybe a lot of the information comes in, because obviously not all of it's accurate. Not everything we got was accurate. We felt obligated to put out there information that we thought could help the case and help find Jennifer Kessie. Same thing with this one. However, when you sort of know what more than likely the end result of this is, it makes it harder, because now you're on a lot narrower stretch and there's not as many possibilities. There's a very succinct amount of data and amount of things that could have happened inside that small area. Again, compared to Jennifer Kessie, where there wasn't really anything holding in information. I mean, it could have been anything, basically. So I think that's where we have to change our mindset a little bit, maybe, at least mine, because I'm like you. I think that we do get, I don't think clouded is the right term, it's the first word that came to my mind, but I think we get a little bit too focused on our blinders on and trying to find what we want to find. And we do need people from the outside with different ideas and different ways of doing things and different thoughts. And anything helps. Anybody that has information, obviously, or has maybe a different theory or a different way of looking at something, maybe they'll say, no, you guys are not right about this. This, this, and this. Think about it like this and think about it like this. There could be something that we're just completely not, on the right track with. And so we welcome any of that. I absolutely would, because I just, man, this one has been tough as far as trying to make headway with it. And, her parents are such great people. This one has just been slow plodding right now. I think that can change, but I think we're going to have to maybe change our mindset a little bit, and we're going to have to get some people that are going to, help us do that.
As always, thank you for listening and for participating. This show is nothing without all of you. If you'd like to support the show, the single best way that you can do that is by subscribing and rating 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast player. Next time, we're inviting all of you to participate. We need your comments or questions. They can be about Tracy Ocasio, Jennifer Kessie from season 1, or anything else that you think's pertinent. Remember that the voicemail line is always open. 321-710-6304. Or you can reach us by email at unconcludedpod@gmail.com. That's unconcludedpod@gmail.com. Lastly, we'll start a thread in the Facebook group. The group's called Unconcluded Podcast Discussion Group, and you can also participate there. And if you aren't already a member, we hope you'll join. We look forward to hearing from you, and we'll see you next time.